Hey guys, welcome back to our Hope City podcast. I'm your host for this new series, Justin. I'm on the creative team here at Hope City Church, and I'm so excited to be bringing to you a new series talking about the issue of mental health affecting people in the church. So today we have an amazing guest coming from Edmonton, Alberta, my friend Jordan Rio. Jordan, welcome to our show. We're so glad to have you here this week. And tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Oh, thanks for having me out, Justin. Yeah, like you said, my name's Jordan. I am a graphic designer here in Edmonton, Alberta. By day, I do a graphic design for a consulting company. Pretty corporate, but in my off time, a little more creative. I do a lot of photography, a lot of illustration, and that kind of thing.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've seen some of your work on Instagram. It's really beautiful stuff, man.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, so I just want to get right down to business with our topic. So we're here to discuss, you know, the issues surrounding mental illness and how they affect people like you and me. I myself have dealt with bipolar disorder the past 10 years. I was diagnosed after high school, so I definitely kind of can relate to the feelings of depression and, you know, isolation and feeling that anxiety surrounding, like, the stigma of mental illness, especially in the context of being in the church, right? Like, we don't like to talk about those kind of things. I really believe that we are meant to charge forward and take initiative to open up and let people share their stories and share their voices about what's going on with mental health. So that's why you're here, man. So we're so excited to hear your story.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Very so tell us a little bit. So what personally is your mental health struggle or struggles?
Similar to you, is just after college, actually, here in Edmonton, that I kind of started to see more of the effects of the these challenges in my life. They had always been present here and then in my life, but never enough evidence, I'll say, to kind of point me to what the real problem was. Not until after, like I said, I graduated from college, when all the stress of life was starting to kind of heap on, like getting into a job outside of college. I, at the time, had realized I didn't want to go into what I had studied in school, which was a huge, huge stressor for me, which was huge. Was playing on my mind like, oh, I just wasted all my time. I just wasted all this money, and I didn't know what I was doing. And so that's kind of added on and started to add a kind of a catalyst to the issues already kind of present in my brain. I found out later on there was actually a part of my brain that wasn't working properly. So this kind of added fuel to the fire, which just sent me into a bit of a spiral. Mm-hmm. But I was thankfully diagnosed. My mom made me go to a doctor officially and kind of dragged me there. But thank God she did. Mm-hmm. They diagnosed me with a couple things. General anxiety disorder, GAD, clinical depression, and panic disorder, which together are a kind of nasty mix of things to be dealing with all at once.
Can you give us a brief overview of GAD and as well as clinical depression?
Sure. GAD stands just for generalized anxiety disorder, which means that most things are a bigger deal to you than a normal quote-unquote person would kind of see them as. Everything seems a lot more stressful, even if it's not. And there can be things that trigger your anxiety kind of response to them. You'll be a lot more fearful of things. Mm-hmm. And they could be things that aren't necessarily even typically things that people are scared of. Your brain kind of chalks it up to more of a big deal than they should be. But the stress response kind of comes into your body anyway through your brain. And so for you, it's very real. It's very visceral. It's very dangerous. It's very scary, but you might not also know all the time what it's coming from.
Yeah.
And in turn, once you kind of react to all those fears and those stressors, your body does run out of energy very quickly. Mm-hmm. And constantly being so drained of energy and emotions all the time and just adrenaline being on high all the time, when you do hit a low point, when you do run out of all that energy, it is very easy to slip into depression, and it's very easy to isolate yourself because you everything, as it's being stressful, it's also being traumatic to you. So to hide yourself away from anything that could harm you or you feel could harm you, it's a
stimulation.
Lot. Yeah, and, yeah. It's very easy to isolate yourself away, to kind of hide yourself from those things.
Okay.
And if you stay inside all the time with those thoughts, it's very difficult to pull out of it.
Yeah, I've noticed a similar thing in my own life when I've dealt with a manic episode, for example, where you have that adrenaline rush and it's almost like your body like can't stop producing adrenaline and you just start living off of it. And it's almost like you're drugging yourself with your own, you know, fuel. So I found that when I have slipped into a depression, it wasn't so much that I just got depressed because I had a low, but it was because, like you said, like I was exhausted and I was overstimulated and I felt just depleted of, you know, energy and just enthusiasm and just it felt so off. So I can definitely relate to that feeling of isolation. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what triggers a depressive episode or what triggers you to have a panic attack or a an anxiety attack.
And that's kind of a very tricky spot as well, because for some people who deal with this sort of thing, their triggers are very obvious. It could be heights, or it could be something in their day-to-day. They're scared of going on the train. They're scared of going on the bus. They're scared of big groups of people. There's some triggers that are very easy to spot, like those things for some people. But sometimes it could be nothing at all. You could be, and this is one thing I dealt with a lot, was I was sitting at my desk at work. I was just kind of doing quietly work, no big deal, no stressors, no stimulate input, and I'd have a panic attack. Like, it would just, all of a sudden, my body just freaks right out. My mind just freaks right out. I couldn't sit still. I couldn't stay there. Mm-hmm. I had to get out now. So it's very tricky, because sometimes there are things and sometimes there aren't. And that's one of the biggest hurdles for anyone that doesn't really know what's either happening to them or someone they know, is understanding that it's not always something that's causing it. Sometimes it just kind of comes and goes.
Do you find it hard to come down from a panic attack? Like, what's kind of the time frame you've experienced that it could take place? Or does it kind of shut off all of a sudden? Or
it really depends on where you are. Because if you're in the middle of a stressful situation, it's going to go on for a lot longer, because that stimuli around you isn't exactly helping. Even if it's not what triggers it, it adds to it. So if you're at like a concert even, or if you're on that busy bus and there's constant noise, or there's constant people rushing past you, or there's any sort of thing that kind of adds to the stress.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It doesn't help you bring it down very fast. But if you are in a safe place, or if you're with people who make you feel safe, or if you're at home, it's a lot easier to kind of come down. Or if you have a safe place you can go, or a mental place you can go, kind of to put yourself in a more calm position. Yeah. It helps a ton. But they've ranged from anywhere from a couple minutes, literally under a minute, to some have lasted for a couple days.
Oh my gosh.
Until you literally run out of energy and you just kind of peter out. It's pretty scary.
Can you tell us a personal story about a time when you, maybe one of the first times that you had an episode or had a panic attack, and what that felt like to you and what happened, and how did the people around you respond to you in that moment too?
One of the first big ones I remember was just after graduation. I had a bit of a night terror sort of thing. Like, I woke up in the middle of the night and I shot out of bed, and it's just like everything was dark. Everything was trying to get me. My heart was pounding out of my chest. My lungs were the size of raisins. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't get a breath in. I couldn't slow my heart down. My head was just pounding in. All my nerves felt like they were on fire. Like, all the joints, your elbows, your hands, they just feel like they're being like lit, like a sparkler. And I can remember it so vividly, because I didn't know what was happening. I was terrified. And it was just, I was just asleep. That was the scary thing. Like, I didn't know what it came from either. So that was one of the most clear moments where things started to show up more often. And that was kind of the turning point where I thought, okay, maybe there's something going on that I'm not seeing here.
And were you quick to tell somebody you loved, like your parents or family members, about it? Or
no,
you keep it to yourself for quite a while before you got help?
This was still a little bit before people were kind of talking more about mental health. So I didn't really have the resources to understand what was going on. I didn't know that that's what I should be looking for. That's what I should be paying attention to. I definitely kept it to myself for a bit, because I just thought, like, maybe I'm sick or something. Maybe it's something that I'm doing wrong. Like, oh, I need to eat more leafy greens, or like just shove more kale into my body or something like that.
Yeah.
And so, like, I tried all those things, but it ended up getting worse and worse. And until the point I couldn't actually go to work anymore. Like, I would just stay home for days on end and call in sick. And they'd get mad at me. And then that would kind of be like, oh, I'm letting them all down.
Yeah.
And so it was, I was kind of kicking myself while I was down too. So then that's when I started to realize that this wasn't a thing I could do really on my own.
So what was your aha moment when you're like, man, I'm ready to get help. And I think I have something a bit more serious than just, you know, I need to get more leafy greens in me and stuff.
For sure. This was when my mom actually came to visit me. And the fact that she came to visit me without letting me know beforehand gave me like a full-on panic attack. Like, I was shaking, sitting in a chair. And she's like, I just walked in. Like, I just came to say hi. Like, and I couldn't handle someone just showing up randomly to see me without me knowing previously that they were going to come. And that point, when my mom showed up and I had a panic attack, I knew, okay, there's something that's not okay, because Lord knows I love my mama. So so that was kind of a big wake-up call. Like, maybe I should start to talk to someone about this. Yeah. And that's kind of when she was like, yeah, you're not okay. So she dragged me to a doctor. So
what did getting help look like to you? And what was your reaction when you had a diagnosis from a doctor?
For sure. This point is kind of where I find a lot of people start to lose hope that they can get help. And it's a very important kind of crossroads, because a lot of people in the health industry that take care of mental health, a lot of them aren't looking for a cure for you, or to help you, I should say. They're not necessarily a cure. They're not looking really to help you. They're kind of just looking to give you a Band-Aid and send you on your way.
Right.
Which is kind of how a lot of people will go to, say, a therapist or a psychologist, and they don't get anything out of it. The first time they go, they're like, this guy's a quack, this lady's a quack, this person's a quack, this person doesn't know what they're talking about. Like, they just want to give me pills, or they're just like, how do you feel about that?
Yeah.
They don't feel like they're actually getting the help they need. It took me months to find someone that could actually help me get through some things. I talked to over a dozen people in the mental health industry who are supposed to be able to be knowledgeable and be able to teach me about what's going on with my brain and what's going on with my body. But half of them, they didn't understand me, or I didn't understand them, or I wasn't comfortable enough to kind of get that level of communication between the two of us. And it was funny, I actually ended up seeing a psychologist here in Edmonton who ended up, I found out later, was actually a Christian, and I didn't know till the very end. But it was funny, because just immediately clicked, and like, they understood exactly what was going on. They knew exactly kind of how to help me, how to show me techniques to deal with the things I was dealing with, and kind of tools to use in those situations where I was so low that I couldn't find myself back out of a hole in depression, or I was so amped up that I couldn't find my way back down from a panic attack.
Yeah.
So
crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found in my own story and dealing with mental health stuff is that it did take some time to find a specialist or somebody or a counselor that, you know, really understood me and cared enough to listen to my story and cared enough to not just push pills down my throat or push them at me and injections and all that kind of stuff, but actually cared enough to be like, how are you doing? You know, like, how are you doing, Justin? How are you, you know, coping with this? Like, what does it feel like to be, you know, in a manic episode or in a depressive episode and stuff. So, and I did find that help that I needed, but it took, you know, a couple bouts through going to Alberta Hospital and, you know, different psych wards and stuff to actually find, you know, help. And also I think it takes a lot of it too, is coming to find somebody that actually you're willing to submit to, right? Because it's easy to be like, yeah, I'll take the pills and stuff and just kind of keep living my life the way that I've always lived it. But it's really interesting, and it's a different story altogether to be able to submit your trust to a doctor, somebody who you know has your best interest in mind. It sounds like you found that a little bit, and that's really cool that you met a Christian counselor or doctor in that field.
So it was really out of the blue too, so it was it was really cool. One thing I do want to know quickly before we move on is just for anyone who might be listening to this, we trash talk the medication a lot, but it is very much a valuable tool to move forward on dealing with things. Just remember that the medication itself is not the fix. The medication is more of a cast to hold you in place while you mend, while you find the tools that you need to move forward.
Yeah.
it's not something that's going to be with you forever. The medication is just there to hold you while you heal. Yeah. So just that's one thing I always like to remind myself and other people that I know are dealing with this sort of thing. It's the medication is not a forever fix.
It's not a be-all fix by any means.
And it's not necessarily something we should demonize as well. It's definitely a beneficial thing to use.
I definitely agree with you, Jordan. But it can be hard when you've been on the wrong medication and the wrong treatment plan for a few months or a few years.
Yeah.
And like, for example, for me, I gained like 60 pounds on one medication that I was on, and I knew it was one of the side effects, but you know, gaining that weight and feeling kind of, you know, self-conscious about it and not wanting to take it, then like I decided to go off of it by myself and stuff, and obviously I ended up back in the hospital, so that's not good. But when you're finally able to stabilize, you can then look at other areas of your life and say, well, now I'm sleeping better, now I'm able to focus more, now I'm not having the same panic attacks that would just sneak up on me, so now I can focus on my work, focus on rebuilding relationships, having health in those areas, having health and fitness, or in, you know, eating well, and like those kind of things kind of help you, you know, find resolve and find that balance. What are a few areas of your life that you've been able to work on, being you've been stabilized with medication, that you've been able to grow in, whether it's fitness, whether it's in health or in relationships?
Like you just mentioned, relationships are definitely one of them. Not necessarily romantic ones, more just friendship-based and camaraderie between other Christians and other folks at work and stuff like that. Before, I could barely even handle being at work with other people or being in an elevator with other people. Not because I disliked them, it was because I couldn't handle being in there. But being able to have that stability to move forward and actually be able to put effort and be able to put growth into relationships with people, it is such a lifesaver. Because that in itself, being able to grow a group around you or to have a kind of a support group of people who understand, they might not know exactly kind of what you go through, but understand where you're coming from and understand that the things you deal with are intense and may not necessarily reflect on how you're wanting to be that day, but it's kind of what you're dealing with that day.
Mm-hmm.
Just to have those people that you've built the relationship with that understand that and can kind of work with you on that is huge in itself.
Yeah, it's funny for me, like for my experiences, I found like the same people I tried so hard to push away were the very people that I needed to pull back into my life so that I could actually find peace and find stability. So it's important to kind of overcome that pride and that, you know, that need for isolation and realize that, like, you know, the people around you do care about you and they want what's best for you. Mm-hmm. And they want, maybe the people at your church that want to know more, just, you know, don't be afraid to let them in. Don't be afraid to go out for that coffee, go out for that sandwich for lunch and, you know, go for a long drive and just spill some beans to somebody. Because a lot of people, I think, Jordan, are in that kind of breaking point that you mentioned earlier where they're saying, like they know that something's wrong, you know, that they've had a repeated issue, a mental health issue. They don't like totally know what it is, but they know like I can't keep living this way. I need to find help. So how would you say you've navigated your faith journey in the context of dealing with a mental health issue?
Is a bit tricky when you have so many things going on in your mind that it's easy to put off your relationship with God and your kind of walk with Christ when you're dealing with those sort of things, because it's the last thing you want to think about. Like, I'm dealing with this right now, and there's so many things I have to worry about. It's hard to remember that God didn't leave. He didn't just leave you alone in all this.
Yeah.
One thing that I was told while I was dealing with some of the most major issues was, God's not doing this to you. He's not making you suffer. He's allowing this to happen. He's allowing this to happen for a reason. And if you seek him out in these moments, he will be there with you. He's not going to leave you in that pit by yourself.
Yeah.
He's going to be there all along the way showing you. And sometimes it's for a reason to kind of hold you back for a minute and kind of show you like, you can't do this on your own.
Yeah.
Like, this is not something you can handle on your own. You need to walk with me in this. You need to bring me along for the ride with you. In this mental health journey. And it's a real humbling thing to kind of realize that and pray about it, because you realize God's just sitting there like, are you gonna try to figure this out all by yourself?
Yeah.
Or are you gonna let me work in your life? Are you gonna let me help heal you? Are you gonna allow me that in your life?
Mm-hmm.
So
there's a verse that I love reading in Psalm. I forget where it's from, but it's just from the Message version. It says, like, when you're broken down in heart and spirit, you'll meet God right there. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, you know, I used to think that I'd meet God, you know, in the middle of the church service between, you know, the third song or Oceans or like the closing, you know, prayer from the pastor. But like, a lot of the time, you know, we meet God in community, and we meet God in the context of brokenness and in the context of suffering. And it's, you know, we realize that our scars, you know, provide an avenue where, you know, we didn't know how broken we really were and how much we needed God to come in and to reveal himself to us. So what would you say to somebody who's struggling with a similar thing? Or maybe they just somebody watching has realized that, man, I think I have depression or I have anxiety. What kind of advice would you give to them if they're coming to you?
First off, I would say you've come to someone, you started talking about it, you've opened up about it. Congratulations, that's huge. That in itself, the bravery even just to come out and be like, okay, maybe I have a problem. That alone, pat yourself on the back, because that is big in itself. That's huge. Yeah. To be able to recognize that there may be an issue here. Second thing I would recommend for them to do is start kind of making, not a journal, but kind of like tracking like what sort of things are happening in their lives. Kind of take an account of maybe some things that are triggering these events, or maybe some environmental issues that they are living in, because there's definitely things that are stimuli that are around you in your day-to-day life that can add to these things. Yeah. So start to make a list of things like, okay, this is something that adds stress to my life, or this is something that adds pressure, gets me low, or affects me in these ways. Start finding those things and start jotting them down and start making kind of a list. And even that in itself can help some people that are just like, oh, I'm living in a toxic relationship, or I'm living in a abusive family or something. Anything along those lines, then they can kind of focus out those things. And for some people, it's as simple as that. For people who have more of a deep-rooted issue and problems with these things, though, I would take that list with you and start looking for professional people to talk to, even if it's just your parents at first. They don't have to be professional at all. They can just be your parents or someone that you feel very comfortable with. Let them know, I'm not doing all right. These are the things that are bugging me. These are the things I'm dealing with. It really comes down to, I encourage people to not do this journey alone. This is not something that you can do yourself. Not that I doubt anybody's strength. It's just these things can become very overwhelming extremely fast, and they can really take over your life if you're not careful. And so having that support system of people that may not necessarily understand exactly what you're going through, but can understand where you're coming from and can understand that you're not necessarily doing okay, but they're there to love you anyway, is huge. Yeah. That in itself is a major stepping stone.
Yeah.
And from that point, when you kind of have that foothold with a support system, it's a lot easier to move forward with professional help if you go see a counselor or a psychologist, or if you do decide to go on medication. It's way easier if you have that group behind you, or that person behind you rooting for you.
Yeah, Jordan, I think that's just incredible value for our listeners and viewers, because it comes down to if you're doing it alone, the chances are you're not going to make it too far. You're not going to make it, you know, you may not even make it the next year. You know, a lot of the time when I felt I had feelings of suicidal thoughts and stuff, and but the breaking point was I went to my dad and said, hey, Dad, like, I feel this way. What should I do about it? Because I don't want to stay in that part. But we need people in our lives who can pull us out of the trench and pull us out of the ditches that we find ourselves in, and give us that hope that we can't maybe muster up on our own strength. So we're going to wrap up pretty quick here, Jordan, but I just want to talk a little bit about the power of sharing your story. So we've all got a story, and a lot of people that deal with mental health concerns have been through situations and seasons that like have been really low and hard and challenging. So if somebody feels like they have a story that they need to share, that it's going to help somebody else in their journey, what kind of encouragement would you give to them to say, you know, like, don't be afraid, tell somebody, you know, make a little Instagram story, like be confident and brave to share it.
I would definitely encourage anyone who's had these sort of issues in their life, or know someone who's been very close to them, or maybe they've been that support system, to share these stories. I'm so thrilled that mental illness is being more talked about these days, more openly. It's less of a stigma around it. there's more people talking about it, there's more people sharing their stories. So it's becoming more, there's more info coming out about it, and it's helping people realize that they're not alone in all this.
Yeah.
So
it's so easy to get lost in your own head, right? So as soon as you're like,
so easy,
I just need to communicate what's going on in my heart with somebody, you know, and maybe it's going to help them. And I found, like, when I was at Nate, I had the opportunity to write a little short story script for a documentary, and they ended up filming a little piece on part of my mental health journey. But I realized that, like, I was so nervous in the moment to share it and, like, to be filmed and to, like, have my interview and stuff. But, like, when I realized, like, somebody came up to me and watched the documentary a few months later and they're like, man, that really impacted me. Thank you for sharing. It just, like, it kind of brings that perspective on your life where it's like, my story isn't just for me. You know, my struggles aren't just for me, and that pain that I've experienced isn't just meant to be bore by me alone, right? We have we get to share our pain, and other people get to find healing and, like, find resolve in the context of our own story. So
it's huge. And even here at the project, I was able to be part of a small kind of documentary thing, kind of outlining my experience with it as well, and just to be able to have that ability to share it, even if you don't feel ready, because Lord knows I never feel ready to exactly talk about things, but I will never turn down an opportunity to talk about it, because we need to talk. We need to talk about these things, because they're not going away just by pushing them under a rug. So
yeah. But, well, Jordan, I'm so grateful you've come on our show and shared your heart and shared part of your story with us. You're so brave and so courageous for sharing your story. So we're just, thank you, man.
Oh, I appreciate just being able to come talk about it. So, and hearing about your story as well is huge. So yeah, always open to talk. So
amazing. Yeah. Well, awesome. And best of luck with your future endeavors in photography and graphic design. And I can't wait to, hear more of your story sometime. So
sounds good. Thanks.
Bless you, man.
Awesome.
Hey guys, thank you so much again for tuning into this week's episode with Jordan. Next week, we've got our special guest, Gloria, who works in our youth department here. She'll be talking more about GAD and anxiety disorder. See you next week.